Blog Talk Radio.
Most of the time, you don't have to think about what to do. You just go ahead and do it.
From the Temple of Truth, the Willie Lawson Show, here on Blog Talk Radio. From the Temple of Truth, the Willie Lawson Show, here on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, and welcome to the Willie Lawson Show. This is a special edition of the Willie Lawson Show, a sunny edition. We normally do our show Monday through Friday here on Blog Talk Radio at noon, but we have a special edition. We did one last night at 11, and we're doing one here on the East Coast at 9. Special edition show. I have a very, very good friend of mine on that's going to come on and help me with this. And he's going to help me. This isn't like, oh, I'm the lead here. And no, he's going to help me with this. Because we need to talk about what happened yesterday. If you didn't know, in the George Zimmerman murder trial, George Zimmerman was exonerated of all charges and today is a free man. And according to a report I saw on Drudge, George Zimmerman is thinking about going to law school. That's great. But we need to talk about how we got here to this position. Should have never been here in the first place, possibly. I just had a conversation with my friend Eddie Adams Jr. that I do the Porch Talk Radio show with here in the area, and I told him that that this case should have probably been civil first, where the burden of proof is a lot less. I mean, it isn't beyond a reasonable doubt. But as it is, you know, like we always say, things are what they are, and it is what we take from life, and the lessons we learn, and how well we learn them is how good our life is going to be. So, listen, I'm going to bring on my friend Ken McClinton. Ken is the host of the Exceptional Conservative Show, a show on American Conservative Nation. And I'm sure you've heard this.
You're listening to AC Nation.
AC Nation is we're both part of that group that do a fantastic job. And I'll tell you before I bring Ken on. Ken started listening to my show and was in the chat room and was always complimentary and. When the show needed help to do something, Ken was always right there, and I owe a lot to Ken McClinton. He's helped me get guests, he's helped me with travel, he's helped me with support and prayer. I owe a lot to him, and it is an honor to have him on the show this evening. So, Ken, are you there, my man?
I am here with you, brother, and you owe me nothing. It is the duty. As we're citizens of the kingdom of God, to be brothers to one another in time of need, in season and out of season. And so it is a great honor to stand upon your shoulders Monday through Thursday nights at 9 to decipher the filtered news that Americans get on a daily basis and give you an opinion based on a Judeo-Christian value and as well a purview into the five basic institutions of culture. And I thank God for you being here on a nightly basis, on a daily basis, and reaching with truth. In our community over the past few weeks, this has been a very torturous affair. And thanks to some of the things that have been learned over the years with Marxism and liberalism, but you have remained steadfast, unmovable. And God bless you in terms of your endeavors with your radio program.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Listen, last night, the verdict in the Trayvon Martin case came out. And, of course, this verdict had to be unanimous. The jury decided that that George Zimmerman was not guilty of the charges, which in our system, and people have to understand, and especially the people who are upset, the people who are frustrated, and they don't really understand. In our system, it's the state has to prove their case. They have to prove it with the preponderance of evidence. And in this kind of case, it was always going to be difficult if it was going to be possible at all. So the jury looked at the case that the prosecution presented and found that there was not evidence to convict George Zimmerman of any of the charges that faced him, including the lesser charges of manslaughter, even in the state of Florida. And I think it's important that people understand that this is what our legal system is and that we don't ever want it to be any different. We want it to always be based on evidence and not emotion. I think what we're seeing here, Ken, is we're seeing a lot of emotional release. And for all sorts of reasons I'm not really upset with. I think that I'm going to talk about this later. I think that I think our community has been manipulated by media in this and for some, you know, some nefarious reasons, frankly. But is that how you see this case come out? Do you see that this was just a case about the preponderance of evidence?
What I see in this particular case, and you know, I've been very steadfast from the very beginning that this was a self-defense case. And that the evidence would show itself to be that. The tinge of me being an offense to my own community and not worthy of the black card, and I'm still awaiting my application to be reviewed by Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. I hope someday I'll be getting my card. But really, this has nothing to do with anything that any of us are really talking about. This is the liberal agenda on display, built on the tenets of Marxism. This is built on the ideal that where two or three agree, that is the fight for lynching, where individuals believe that they feel that they are right about something. That is enough for the political machinery to go in gear and to make judgment where it should be a peer group of individuals who are considering the evidences that are presented, the witnesses that are presented, and the testimonies of the individuals who are present. That's our system. Everything to this particular point has been done to throw that system out, to move us from a court of law and rules of law to a court of polling and a court of public opinion. And too many of us have been caught up into details, and we'll talk about this as we go on, but pseudo-details, myths, innuendos, and racial factoids that matter nothing to the evidences of this being a self-defense case. And we did a great, great disservice by not following the case based on reasoning, but following the case based on media fluctuations, political discourse, and racial feelings. Secondly, I just want to say I do not think there will be riots whatsoever because this doesn't have an appeal that many in our communities wanted to have. They wanted to, as activists, upset the system so that the court would be the court of law would be replaced by the court of public opinion. It didn't happen. The rule of law won. Congratulations, our system still works.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. Again, that so often anymore, no matter what this doesn't just matter to this particular case. It matters to any set of circumstances that we face. I am often bombarded with people saying, "Well, most people believe this," and I'm thinking, So what's that to do with the price of tea in China? So this poll says that most people think that there ought to be gun control. And we're going to talk about that, too, because the president has come out again with his agenda, stepping over the dead bodies of children to push his agenda. And if that's a harsh way to put it, that's exactly what happened today. I mean, there's no other way to put it. That's exactly what happened today. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. But you know what? We're constantly bombarded by polls that nobody knows how they're manipulated. Nobody knows how they're taken and put in front of the American people as fact. When in fact there are factoids, and factoids are actually things that continue to be said that aren't true that become true. That's what a factoid is, ladies and gentlemen. I looked it up. I don't know. Public
See,
school,
that's
man.
Because you are committed
school.
To truth, man. That's the way to do it.
I wanted to know what a factoid was, and a factoid actually is a lie. That's what a factoid is. And isn't it interesting that that USA Today puts in their paper factoids all the time and calls them factoids? I think that's an amazing thing to me. I don't know. Any case, but you know what? We're constantly bombarded with that. Polls say this, that we should be doing this, that the polls say that, you know, the people want free health care, blah, 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 blah. When the fact of the matter is that you don't have any idea how these things are put together, if they're true or not. And that seems to be the thing. I mean, you can't run it. Can you run a country based on a set of opinion polls? Of course not.
No,
it's insane.
Madison,
it's ridiculous.
Madison, Jefferson, Hamilton, all of them understood the simple fact that the minority, 500 people, should not be able to speak for 300 million. You should not change traditional marriage because 1% of the population may or may not on a given day feel like a woman. You know what I'm saying?
Ouch.
You just don't do that.
Ouch.
So, you know, there are certain principles and certain statutes and certain customs and traditions and beliefs that are sincere and stand the test of time. And this goes out to, I just want to say this real too, a quick editorial. I know we're going to be talking about the whole range, but I want to say this. The one group of people I am most sincerely disappointed with are the ministers in urban America. This was the moment where you should have been teaching about justice, and instead, you started preaching about preference. You did no better than Jacob with his son Joseph in terms of doing that. Preferencing is just another form of profiling. And because it didn't come out in your stead or the way that you have prayed unto God for justice to come, you continue on with preaching and teaching which are in direct opposition to what truth and justice are about. I just want you to know, preacher in urban America, that God's grace is so sufficient that it will supplement and overtake our sinful nature. And his mercy is so great that he will allow it to rain on the just and the unjust. Those are the things that you should be reaching out to and teaching a generation instead of giving them myths and innuendos to go out with and protesting as if, for some odd reason, they're scripturally sound in doing so. So forgive me, I just need to do that commentary right then and right there.
I feel you. Isn't that amazing? And so often, and I'm sure it happens to you, you know, when you're dealing with, and I'm gonna be racial for a minute. When you're dealing with white folks, especially white conservatives, they always say, "Well, maybe we should get in with the churches because you know the churches are still the center of the black community." I'm thinking, well, if it was really the center, if the church was the church and really the center, the black community would be a lot better off than they are now.
Yeah,
and That's just the truth. They look at me like I suddenly grew through heads. But the fact of the matter is that I don't think that the church that exists in the urban community is the center of anything, or the community would be better.
Exactly. I just want to go over the 13 rules. Forgive me. That churches have used in terms of this particular case. Liberal media have used in terms of this particular case. The president has used in terms of this particular case. And race hustlers like Sharpton and Jackson have used in this particular case. And they all come from Saul Alinsky. Number one, power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. People have been led to believe that because of a federal inquiry, that the president has the power to prosecute this young man into a crime that doesn't exist. Number two, never go outside the expertise of your people. They don't move any further than race on individuals and the brutalization of slavery. The bottom line is we have moved on since 1865. We have moved on since 1956. We have moved on since 1972. Heck, it's 2013 and we have a black president, or half and half, depending on which coffee you drink.
Black, kind of, sort of, not really.
Mocha latte. Whenever possible, go outside the expertise of the enemy. Number four, make the enemy live up to its own book of rules. Number five, ridicule is man's most potent weapon. Have you ever seen these people come on TV and smile and laugh when you give them principle and reason, and then they call you a bigot or a racist?
I love it. Ridicule, that's my favorite one. I love ridicule because, you know what, I'm not that doggone nice to start with. So ridicule is one. I'm telling you. I've told people, I'll let you go on. I've told people, pick one. Which one of these are you comfortable with using? Stay inside your wheelhouse, but which of these are you comfortable using? Because these are the rules that are being used against you on a daily basis. Which are you really ready to use for truth? Go ahead, pick one.
Exactly.
I like ridicule, personally. It's a lot more fun. That's the one I've chosen.
Listen, number six, a good tactic is one your people enjoy, and people enjoy talking about racism. Never spend a day on the plantation, but love talking about racism. Don't have a white person in the neighborhood, but love talking about racism. Number seven, a tactic that drags on too long becomes a drag. Number eight, keep the pressure on, never let up. The man wasn't innocent or proven not guilty for 30 seconds before we heard the federal government wants to put charges on him. Number nine, the threat is usually more terrifying than the thing itself. Number 10, the major premise for tactics is the development of operations that will maintain a constant pressure upon the opposition. Department of Justice, community relations. Ever hear that one? Number 11, if you push a negative hard enough, it will push through and become a positive.
Yes.
Number 12, the price of a successful attack is a constructive alternative. And then number 13, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. For the past 3 weeks on social media, my conservative brethren have begun to turn against themselves and use this tactic by Saul Alinsky not to defeat the enemy, but to defeat us. Listen, we're all going to disagree on things, but you know what? You know what? We're conservatives at the very core. We should not be debunking each other on Facebook. We should not be detweeting each other on Twitter. We shouldn't be having Blog Talk radio shows where we're cussing one another out because of what we feel of this particular case. A case in the end, if you had just let a grand jury handle it, wouldn't have gone even this far.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm so glad you said that because I did a show last night and I've been, and you're right, I have been steadfast in how I felt about this from the get, And I know that I run afoul of other conservatives who now, of course, who, you know, and I love this. Like, it means something to me when they unfriend me on Facebook. I always kind of think that's funny. I'm like, what are we, 12? What are we, 12 now, really?
Oh, I just can't deal with you anymore. I'm going to unfriend you. I'm like, okay.
Should I write a letter?
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna unfollow you on Twitter. I'm like, okay, then, all right, because I guess it's your plantation that you want me on, apparently, and I've decided to go off of it. I'm sorry, not really. And you're right; it seems crazy, but you know, when we start looking at this case, and that behavior becomes a problem in the larger picture as well. Because if you don't think that, you know, if these people believe that if you're not walking around in ideological lock think, that somehow you're not as pure as me, so you're a and here comes the term, rhino, blah, 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 all the terms come.
Yeah.
It's insane, but you're right. What's happening is that the other side has used this very same tactic to destroy their enemy, and we just play into it like, all righty, then, I guess we're supposed to kill each other, I guess.
Let's get in a circle.
Ready? Get your weapons. Fire! Yeah, it's crazy. It's insane. You know, and I was thinking, thinking about this on the way home from church, because I know we were doing this evening. The idea is that, yes, folks, we are going to disagree on stuff. Yes, this case is extremely emotional, and we all have, and we're all thinking, you know what, however we're thinking on it. But the fact of the matter is that this is not, and this sounds terrible to say out loud, this is not a case that is so important that it would divide us and keep us from what our goal needs to be. It isn't. Because I told you before that here's a fact, that no matter how it worked out, my life was not going to be different. If George Zimmerman was on his way to Rayford State Prison in Florida, which is the big house, state big house in Florida, if he was on his way there right now, my life would not be different.
Can you say that again for my conservative brethren so that we can get back on the ball on Monday?
Here we go. If George Zimmerman is headed to Rayford State Prison in Florida right now, my life is not any different. If he is headed to Disney World, my life isn't any different. Period.
Bingo.
And when you start looking at this on the level of a scale of importance, as sad as it is for the mom and dad who lost their kid, and you know what, and I'm upset with media because they portrayed this kid as something that he wasn't. He wasn't an angel. He wasn't this angelic figure. He was a kid, you know what, that made a whole bunch of wrong choices. Choices, which put him in Sanford in the first place. If he weren't suspended from school, he wouldn't have been in Sanford in the first stinking place. If he hadn't been selling drugs and had, you know what, burglary tools in his flipping locker. This was not an angel. And I think that that's part of the manipulation of media that upsets me greatly, because it jacks up the emotion of this kind of case that gets people thinking completely irrationally, and people, and then again the Alinsky rules come in, and they're able to manipulate folks with them, and that's part of the problem. But anyway, you know what?
Exactly.
It's a sad thing, but quite frankly, how it changes my life today when the sun comes up tomorrow is zero. It's absolutely zero. It's no effect. I don't know.
I'm sorry, because I know you got to go to a break, but I just want to say this. When we look back on the history of civil rights cases, and you look back, you're talking about Brown versus the Board of Education, Green versus the District of Columbia. You're looking back over a litany. You're talking about the 14th and 15th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. You're talking about Harriet Tubman. You're talking about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and so many others in the history of civil rights in this particular country. Okay? I'm wondering, and I know that this will be offensive to a lot of people, because I'm quite certain that we want to put a mantle in the U.S. Capitol for Trayvon Martin. But have we gone overboard attempting to present an image of someone simply because we feel that our race is the most important thing to us rather than justice? That's my question, because I don't believe that Trayvon Martin ever passed a legislation, ever sat on the back of the bus, ever had to worry about being considered property rather than person like Dred Scott. And yet we have individuals like Jackson and Sharpton, and there are those who are in the blog media, social media, who will emotionally shut down because they don't want to deal with this question. Are we beginning to simply make images of idolatry to the civil rights movement because we feel that things are not just for us? That is a question that needs to be addressed in our community.
Yeah, we'll talk about that right after this. You know what? We do have to take a break. That's a fantastic question. This is the Will Austin Show, a special edition with my friend Kim Clinton. We'll be right back with more of Will Austin right after this break. The United States is the home of the free. Our high quality of life is based on our ability to be safe and secure. And the place we treasure that security more than anywhere else is in our home. That is why the Willie Lawson Show is associated with Vivint. Vivint is number one in home automation, energy management, and home security. Vivint offers the very best in remote monitoring and control for the modern family. To get more information, call 877-739-1469. That's 877-739-1469.
Let me get Eugene to answer. Sure. And let me just recite the question to Eugene. Is liberation and transformation inclusive of giving parents the freedom to choose their own school?
Well, let's just say I'm going to paraphrase a gentleman who came through the D.C. public school system a number of years ago, Wilson High School. His name was Warren Buffett. And he says, you know, there's an easy way to solve the problem in schools like Washington, D.C., where he, you know, spends a lot of time. And he says, you know, we could create great public schools, but we'd have to almost abolish the private schools, force people to utilize their tax dollars in their best interest where their kids are going to school. So,
please join your host, Ken McClinton, on the Exceptional Conservative Show, right here at acnation.com at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Thursday, as he lays out his battle plans and stand shoulder to shoulder in the fight to take back our country. Tuning in live is easy. Go to acnation.com and click on the play button in the Blog Talk Radio player. Be sure to visit the official webpage for show lineups and other details at theexceptionalconservativeshow.com.
Our latest sponsor to the Wacko Network is OneVice.ag. OneVice.ag is the place to be seen for all of your online gaming needs. Competitions, free contests, free registrations, friend referrals, bonuses, and you get your money in a hurry and 24-hour customer service chat available online. Please visit their Facebook fan page and click the like button, then leave a comment saying you heard about them from the Wacko Network. And remember, at OneVice, what's life without one?
welcome back to the Willie Lawson Show here on Blog Talk Radio. We are a division of AC Nation, and we appreciate you being here on this Sunday evening as a special edition. I have my friend Clint McClinton on the air. We're talking about the Zimmerman trial and all the things around it that other people aren't talking about, and talking about it in a way that mainstream media is simply not going to talk about, and the poverty pimps and the race hustlers are not going to talk about. It is extremely important that this get into, you know, what we talk about this evening, get into the universe, because I think it's the only way to move past and through these issues that continue to be used against the people, so to speak, because of the Alinsky rules and how things are talked about. Ken made a great point right before the break about how this all plays out, how media and the like idolize these individuals or make an idol of the civil rights movement. And it's, you know what, it's, you know what's for me, and this is kind of a, I don't know, kind of a silly way to put it, but it works for me. It's the Disney version of the real thing. Where, you know, that it's like when you go to Disney and you see something that's a representation of the real thing, it is so sanitized and changed and fit for public consumption, the essence of what the real thing was lost. You mentioned that Trayvon Martin. I won't use Trayvon Martin. I'll use me. I did not suffer the same sort of adverse and in-your-face racism as my grandparents did, or their parents did. I didn't. There were places I got to go, and even in the South, there might have been people there who weren't happy with my presence there, but you know what? I got to go. It wasn't the written rule that, oh, no, you can't be here. You can't touch this. You can't drink this. You can't sit here. That's my existence, and I'm 52 years old. That wasn't my existence. That wasn't my experience. Trayvon Martin was a few years younger than my son, who simply hasn't experienced the sort of, you know, in your face racism that even I did. So to idolize him as this champion of the civil rights movement is insulting, frankly, to the people who did. The people who had dogs turned against them and water hoses and were strung from trees and had their churches burned down. The real thing, folks, the real thing. Laws that said you can't, laws written in books, written down that says you may not sit here, you must sit back there. It was a law that people followed. You know, people, I love this, Ken. People always said, you know what? If I was a slave, I'd be like Django. No, you wouldn't. You'd be dead.
You would. That's what you'd be. You would. Let's just be earnest about this whole scenario and situation of self-defense. Gun control was created so that African-Americans, black, Negro, colored, however way you wish to go this week, could not defend themselves. So, in a sense, when we tell people, and I'm going to read to you what the Office of the Press Secretary for the White House put out earlier today.
This is awful. We
put out statements to the fact at the highest levels of government that we want to remove the rights of men, the unalienable rights of men from them, it is not for your appeasement value that you should consider this stuff. You have been already patronized for so long. Instead of, and I think you hit on it last night and knocked it out the ballpark into San Francisco Bay. The bottom line is economic power is what you should be striving for, but instead you spend most of your time creating nonprofits and marching the streets talking about civil rights. What you lack is power to back up what you desire most. And when you have economic freedom, it allows you to understand why capitalism works so well in a free market, libertarian, nation and republic like our own. The President of the United States, right, July 14, 2013, and I don't know if Lincoln would have wrote this, but Lincoln understood the Constitution probably better than this president. The death of Trayvon Martin was a tragedy, not just for his family or for any one community, but for America. I know this case has elicited strong passion, and in the wake of the verdict, I know those passions may be running even higher. But we are a nation of laws, and a jury has spoken. I now ask every American to respect the call for calm reflection from two parents who lost their young son. And as we do, we should ask ourselves if we're doing all we can to widen the circle of compassion and understanding in our own community. We should ask ourselves if we're doing all we can to stem the tide of gun violence that claims too many lives across the country on a daily basis. We should ask ourselves, as individuals and as a society, how can we prevent future tragedies like this? As citizens, that's a job for all of us. That's the way to honor Trayvon Martin. Query here. No mention of Zimmerman. Is that just or is that fair? And then lastly, have we gotten to the point under Marxist rule, socialism, liberalism, progressivism in America, that African Americans must ride in their own neighborhoods, debilitating their own economies, in order to make a point that they feel that they're not being treated fairly? Is that not the most supercilious thing to put out as President of the United States?
It's ridiculous. It's awful. I mean, it really is awful. And there's no other way around it, Ken. It's awful. It's other than just being supercilious, it's insulting to people's intelligence. It's only one of the few things that he's done is ever transparent, and this is so transparent, and what he's trying to get done, it's disgusting.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. I mean, who can't see through this? Who can't see through this? It's the only thing that he's done of any transparency ever.
You know what's scary? There's some conservatives, like it unto ourselves, they can't see this. They're so stuck on the color of skin that they can't see that the Saul Alinsky battle plan is at work by this administration. If anything, we should be lauding our courts and saying thank you for giving true justice. Now, Congress, Monday morning, start focusing on true justice regarding Benghazi, where four lives were lost, and there's no account for 8 hours by the mocha latte president.
Yeah.
If you want justice, start there.
That you know what? And somebody mentioned that. Someone mentioned that there are so many other places, and Benghazi was a great reason. Benghazi is great because you know what you have in Benghazi? You have dead people in Benghazi. You've got injured people in Benghazi, and you've got the truth not being told. So even if you are someone who believes that George Zimmerman had some responsibility in the death of Trayvon Martin. So you've got the same thing. You've got truth not being told. You've got death. You've got the whole deal. How come this man, this president, is not being forthwith and his search for truth, justice, and the American way when you start talking about Benghazi, when you start talking about Fast and Furious, where you have a lot of the same stuff? You've got a lot of innocent people who have died at the hands of our Justice Department in Fast and Furious, which is not gone away, folks. Those people are still dead, and the truth has still not been told. Still. So when the president, you know, what comes up with all this cockamamie nonsense today, that's just designed to push his agenda. Period. Period.
Yeah, but I want to interject here and say this, if I could. What thoughts does he have towards the people that he calls himself the leader of? Now, remember, it's liberals, Marxists, socialists, and Democrats that he leads. And he apparently is writing this letter to them, certainly not to conservatives who were supporting Liz Zimmerman, okay, because that would be like justice or something.
Oh, no.
What does he think of them? He thinks of them as the mob. He thinks of them as, I'll go as far as to say, animals. When you don't get your way, riot. When you don't get what you want, fight. Same thing Al Sharpton was saying on his early days down in Sanford, Florida. And people have to remember, Sanford, Florida is not Beverly Hills, okay? It is not one of the safest places in Florida. I'm quite sure you wouldn't trade places to live in Sanford. But the bottom line is, you have a person who's so far away, okay? He was so far right regarding his professor from Harvard University. He's so far right regarding Trayvon Martin. Notice how he doesn't have to be right about justice. All he has to be right about is pricking the people, the mob, and getting the mob so upset on issues that they can't solve. Period. Over the lifetime, you can't control a man's thoughts. You can't change that. But he gets them so upset that they're ready to tear down their neighborhood because they don't take the bus over to Georgetown to tear that neighborhood down. No. They tear down what's convenient to them. I'm sorry. There you go.
Yeah, we talked about that on our show on Saturday. He's like, here's what doesn't happen here in East Tampa. We don't, you know, well, we got some buses. Now we're heading to Avila. Now Avila is a good community, and that is where Tony Dungy lives. So we know where Coach Dungy's house is. So you hell, that ain't gonna happen. No, because by the time you drive the bus up to Avila, there'll be 8,000 state troopers. There'll be F-16s, mustard gas. No, you're not getting there. You are not getting there. So see, my deal is this. This whole idea of that if something happens and it seems like, I don't know, and I'm going to say it this way, and there's other better ways to say it, I guess, that black people don't get what they want, that this is what these animals do. And the president is saying, this is what you animals normally do. And Jesse Jackson is saying, this is how you animals normally behave. Al Sharpton is saying, this is how you animals normally, you know, this is how we do it, because we're animals and we don't know any better, because we can't think. We are the animals that the races say we are. So, of course, we are, you know, when anytime there's this perceived wrong in our community, of course, what we do is burn down our own house. We take my son was so funny, that we run in our house, take our couch out of our living room and throw it through our front window.
But that's that plantation mentality. Really, when you look at the framework of this, you have to tell those who were in charge over that group, mass are gonna be upset. Whatever you do, I know you're upset. Calm down. But whatever you do, stay away from mass's house. Go over and tear up your own houses. We know that winter's coming and you won't have a place to stay, but at least you got your anger out. You got your frustration out. You're happier now. Jesus says, the poor will be with you how long?
Always.
Always. When you would do them good. The point I'm making here, and a lot of people will say, Ken, you're not politically correct. You're totally off the left field. You're really agitated. No, what I'm saying to you is this. Poor people, and the inference that's being made there in the New Testament statement is that people make poor decisions always. When you would, do them good, but don't create state programs for them. And don't sit around talking about you're going to uphold their unrighteousness. No, if you're angry, if you're upset, go ahead. Vote in someone who's going to bring you justice, but make certain that it is justice that you're seeking and not fairness, because eventually you will get burned by the same rod that you put in office.
Yeah, fairness is subjective, ladies and gentlemen. You don't want to live in a fair society. And when people start talking about fairness, it always makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up, because that very same fairness will be in post haste be used against you. What's fair? We don't want fair. We want just. And living in a just society, but you know what, that requires a level of maturity amongst people that I'm not sure that we have anymore, Ken. I think that's part of our problem. That's a huge part of our problem. We're not talking about the maturity of young people. We're talking about the maturity of people generally, because people haven't had to be mature, because all your mistakes, all your bad decisions, all your bad choices are covered up with a state program, a government program. So no one here suffers. They really don't.
Exactly.
It's very, very rare that people suffer in any real way from any series of choices, bad choices that they've made.
So, Willie, I have to ask you this, sir. And both of us have similar backgrounds in faith. But while the corner store used to be the center place for business and for community information and Caucasian white cultural societies, the church used to be the place where virtues and behaviors and traditions were taught, customs were taught. And as such, there was a commitment from the community based on the involvement of the minister in terms of the lives of the people. I want to ask you, sir, are we seeing the best involvement by ministers in our community that would teach the principles of virtues and that would supplement idealisms regarding being in a republic and understanding the laws of the land? Or are we not being served by those who are supposed to assist in the God-fearing godliness of a community?
No, the simple answer is no, and the reason is because a lot of them are on the take, and I know that sounds terrible to say out loud. It wasn't the most eloquent thing I've ever said, but the fact of the matter is that a lot of urban ministers, a lot of black ministers, are on the take. Because they benefit by spreading whatever the power brokers in a particular area want, and they end up being a propaganda machine for it instead of standing up for what's right. And what's right isn't hidden; it's right there in the Word of God. Open it up, read it, teach it, encourage your people with it, and that has a better benefit long term in your community than anything else. But the fact of the matter is, there is no effectiveness of the urban church because a lot of the ministers, a lot of the pastors are on the take, and that's what it's about, and that's the saddest thing ever, that's the saddest commentary on especially the urban church, the black church, is that so many of these pastors are on the take, and when I say on the take, I mean on the take in a really horribly in a horrible way. I'm talking about money, power, influence, all the things that you consider when you think about being on the take. They are. It isn't just well, you know what, church attendance is down and people are trying to maintain their churches and yeah, there's some of that going on, but not. We're talking about churches that in some of these urban communities are large. Large, yeah. And influential. We're not talking about the guy who has, you know what, that has a church in a declining community that's down to 20 people from 200 last year, and he's just trying, and they're just trying to hold on. We're not talking about that pastor. We're not talking about that church. We're talking about some of these large, black, urban, mega churches that have a responsibility to their parishioners, to the people, to their flock that are on the take. And they are just the mouthpiece of whoever the power brokers are in that community. And that is the saddest truth, but it is the truth.
And so if it's difficult for them to understand or preach justice in the pulpit because on Monday morning they support going down to the Planned Parenthood clinic with a busload of their own congregants, if it's difficult for them, and not to protest, okay, yeah. Let's just make that fundamentally clear. If you have that dichotomy within the urban community, is it easy to see why the message of conservatism gets refuted? Because it is built on moral order?
Oh, yeah, because the message of conservatism has to first do with what you do and how you transverse the planet and you being responsible and you. That's what, you know what, and that's the message of conservatism and the benefit of if you do these things well, if you know what, you benefit. It's the same message. It's the same message of salvation and a relationship with God and relationship with Christ. And it's exactly the same message in that sense. If God has given me this fantastic opportunity, and if I receive it and walk in it and walk in his precepts and his teachings, I benefit.
Yeah.
If you understand and receive the message of conservatism and capitalism, guess what happens? If you understand them, accept them, walk in them, practice them with integrity, you receive benefits. It's virtually the same message now. But if these churches aren't preaching this stuff or teaching this stuff to start with, there isn't any way that they can flip the script and suddenly tell people to start being responsible for themselves. There's no way. I mean, when the things that happen in the pulpit, the things that happen in what we call the deacon possessed churches, that simply are allowed to happen. And everybody knows they have no standing by which to flip the script and suddenly start teaching on personal responsibility when they've not been personally responsible. They've had no ground to teach on integrity when they have not walked in integrity or honesty.
Wow.
That's the truth. So that's why it doesn't happen. And these communities continue to crumble.
And so I want to ask you this question again. Thank you for letting me interview you.
No worries, man. I'm sitting in a pretty comfortable chair. It's nice.
Yeah, I like your chair, man. It's very nice.
Thank you.
But in sincerity with that, if you can't teach people from the scriptures, then you're going to teach them from a vain philosophy. And if you're going to teach them from a vain philosophy, it would be one that would assure you that they would never principally prosper, because then the master is less than the teacher in their eyes. So wouldn't it make sense to subscribe to a philosophy that's going to continue to have a being or enemy that's so large that God can't help you? However, you have a minister that's so great that he can go between God and politics and culture and do things for you to make things come to your fruition. Because he's successful, you're successful. Not because God has a plan for you, not because God has already won the victory, but simply because he can act in your stead and go behind the veil and make God do things for you that normally you wouldn't have him be able to do for yourself.
Well, you know what? That's just a control thing, because that's and again, if that teaching is going on in a church, is obviously going on in a church of people who've unfortunately and sadly have been under that sort of teaching for a long, long time. Because it doesn't take much digging. I mean, you don't have to be a theologian. It doesn't take much digging. I'm into the New Testament that you understand that veil when at Pentecost that veil was split down from the very top to the very bottom, it wasn't just the high priest that got to turn around and do anything. That means that everybody, that was the whole point. This is not really hard stuff. It really isn't. You know, it's amazing. Let me get off on another rap chat for a second. It's amazing how horrendous some of the teaching is in churches. It's just ridiculous because some of this stuff, it's just not that hard. You know what? And we used to teach, and again, another rabbit trail, excuse me. We used to teach a life group at my house here. And I used to tell people, you know, God has a sense of humor because I'm doing this. That's why it's funny. He must be going, Friday. I can't wait. Where's Lawson? There he is. This is funny. Watch this. You know, he's got to be giggling, going, "Oh, this is great!" Everybody, shush! Everybody, listen, watch this. This is that Lawson guy, really? Oh, we're watching this. Yeah, because I was doing it. And I said, listen, God has made it simple for me. Because if this was more, because this was really complicated, I wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Simple. I mean, it's simple. So when the veil was split, that means that everybody, not just the high priestess, could go back in the holies of holies and you know, once a year to the Ark of the Covenant. No, this was everybody. That was what the sacrifice was all about. So if you've got a pastor who's saying that you can't do this for yourself, I can do this for you. No, you can be prosperous if you make me prosperous. No. That's a guy. That's a guy on the hustle. That's the guy, and frankly, the whole prosperity message, like a lot of messages, have been co-opted and corrupted. The idea is that God's got great things for people and wants people to be prosperous, and He wants people to be prosperous because it says so in Proverbs. He wants people to be prosperous. He joys in the prosperity of His people. He joys in that. So when that's being taught to a congregation, in that sense, like you've mentioned, that's part of the hustle. Frankly, that's part of when, like I said before, when these people are on the take, unfortunately, they're not just taken from politicians and the like. They're sometimes taken from the people that need them the most.
Exactly.
And, of course, that's the sad thing. Go ahead.
I want to say this real quick. We talk about race in this matter, and we know that there's no race in this matter. But there was a race that wasn't a matter that was handled back in the mid-1870s. And that was a letter that Frederick Douglass wrote to his former slave master, forgiving him for his sin as a slave master and telling him, I could never love you for what you did, but I can love you because of what God did for me. We have individuals that have co-opted our relationship with Christ, our Creator, with an idealism of Marxism, that fairness is what God seeks and not justice, and that we must have now weeping sessions of prayer for hours on end, asking God which of us held the silver underneath our body so that Zimmerman might be made free. This is my point on this matter. Until we learn as a people that justice is not just for us, that freedom costs everything, and that liberty is a reproach to those who misunderstand the values of life, then we will forever have the charade of racism and bigotry and hatred and solutions for poverty. God wants us to learn how to forgive. And we need a president that has more time to spend writing about grace and mercy to all Americans than one who spends his time writing about the fairness due only a few Americans.
That is
Willie,
true.
Willie, thanks so much for letting me be on the show, man.
Hey, man, it's been great. Hey, don't go anywhere. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back. You see, we don't do this hour thing. We try to push through because we are strong. We're strong. We'll be right back with more of Will Lawson Show after this.
First, there was the Lincoln bedroom. Then there was
no controlling legal authority.
Now, there's a whole new way to buy access to the president. Introducing Organizing for Access. For just one easy payment of $500,000, you too can get the privilege of quarterly meetings with President Obama. You could even become an ambassador.
Excuse us? This just looks bad. It looks like the White House is selling access.
Don't listen to him.
They get the access while you get to write a letter?
Now, thanks to Organizing for Access, painful letter writing is a thing of the past. Why waste your money on expensive corporate lobbyists? We beat their price because we sell direct to you. But wait,
You might be wondering,
I don't want somebody else pulling my strings. They write the checks and you get stuck with the bill. We've got to change how business is done in Washington.
But with Organizing for Access, change miraculously disappears. Incredible.
That suggests that access to the president is being sold.
I would point, I would direct your questions to them.
You're not denying the point that if you give $500,000 or more to this group, you get access to the president.
I would refer you to the organization.
Wonder what candidate Obama would say about this.
I love you back.
Order now and we'll throw in a private meeting with Vice President Joe Biden completely free. Or pay $1 million and you don't have to meet with Biden ever.
Unchained.
Call today and become a charter member of Organizing for Access today. We accept all major credit cards, personal checks, and large sacks of cash.
They get the access while you get to write a letter.
Do you think our country is doing just fine?
Nope.
Do you want the cultural, financial, and political analysis that you just don't get from the mainstream media?
Hell yeah.
Then join David and Brian Terry, the Mayflower Brothers, Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for an hour. That's David and Brian Terry on the Mayflower Brothers, Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Only on acnation.com. See you there.
I love that music. I really do.
When I'm here, I just play it and sing along.
Welcome to the Lawson Show Special Edition here on Blog Talk Radio. My co-host, my guest, my friend, Clinton is here with us this evening. We're talking about the things revolving and surrounding the case of Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. And I hope to be talking about this in a way that you've not heard, talking about things that concern this case that you have not heard. One of the things that you will hear about this week is, I alluded to earlier in the show, just like after the Newtown tragedy, the president and a lot of his ilk stepped over the bodies of those dead children and those families, manipulated those families. Into promoting their agenda. And their agenda, of course, is of gun control. Earlier, Ken mentioned that gun control was in place basically so freed blacks couldn't defend themselves. And this continues to be the case in a lot of cities because we're talking about this past weekend in Chicago, 74 deaths in Chicago over a course of a week. To the silence of Jesse Jackson, to the silence of Al Sharpton, to the silence of Barack Obama, to silence. These people died in Chicago over the course of the week, 74 people. More people died in Chicago, in Illinois, than died in the airplane crash in San Francisco.
Exactly. Listen, Marlon Young, did you hear that name this weekend? Nah. Ed Cooper, 15-year-old black male. Did you hear that name? Mm-mm.
Nope.
How about Georgina Randall, a 30-year-old black female? Didn't hear that name. Marquise Chandler, 20-year-old black male. How about the 19-year-old, since we're into 19-year-olds? Ramon Godfrey. Mm-mm. He was also killed. Patricia Martin, a 40-year-old. Jeremiah Millsap, 24. Terry Patterson, 48. Elliot Fraser, 26. Aurelia Wilburn, 64. Shavonta Hunt Howard, 20. Merlin O'Banner, 31. Stephen Mavens, 21. The Oldest Young, 36. Ernest McMullen, 26. Rayford Brown, 24. William Jones, 26. Damani Hennard, 14. Ashley Hamal, 19. Terrence Graves, 23. What do they all have in common? They're black.
They're all black and they're all dead. And nobody gives a crap.
No.
And that's no. And that is what we. That's and I want to spend, some time, and I want to talk to you about not only when I say nobody gives a crap, I really mean that, because if we were if those communities were outraged in the degree that they seem to be outraged after being pushed and prodded by the poverty pimps and the race hustlers, then these communities, if we are acting the same way they expect you to act, should be on fire and should stay on fire. However, they do not. People go on with their lives as if this is how things are. There is slaughter going on in these communities. Slaughter going on in these communities. And of course, the people I mentioned, the Jacksons, the Sharptons, the Obamas, are completely and totally silent. What happens?
Now, can we also include the Clintons, the Edwards,
yes,
the Kennedys? Can we go? Because, hey, they show up in town, boy, and thank God we need to put pictures of them up on the wall next to Martin Luther King. The bottom
yeah.
line is they don't care. They don't care.
How do we, you know what, but Ken, how do we start convincing black people who live in these areas, black people who do have some sort of, who are still, and let's just assume that there are still people in those communities who are really looking for real answers, they're really looking for solutions, and they've just been hustled. How do we get to them and say, look at where you live, look at how you live, look at what goes on around you, and these people are silent. Let me help you. They don't care. Where's
wow.
the
you know what? We
they
have
don't care.
To seriously, we have to seriously discuss Marxist industry. There are Marxist industries at work in urban America, and they're all for death and destruction. You have the abortion industry that's churning out 1,100 dead babies a day. 1,100 dead babies a day. 1,100 dead babies a day. That's more than 74 people being shot in Chicago, okay? On top of that, you have the prison industry that's created by Marxists. In Chicago, which has probably a large number of African-Americans on the dais, and the city council creating laws to do what? Put the people into prison. There you go. You have the system, the public school education system, where billions of dollars are being spent not to liberate people, but to socialize them into government systems of weakness and of death and destruction. We have to do something so radical that Frederick Douglass would be proud of us. We need to either, A, go in there and kick down the walls and say, you know what, we're not leaving until we've been satisfied, or we need to go to a practice of making certain that at your kitchen table at least once a month, at least once a week, however way you wish to do it, there is someone that you can talk with on these particular issues and point out that this thinking processes is killing our people. Unless we deal with this, we will never overcome it.
I wonder if we will even in 80 years, if the Lord tarries, will we even exist as a people?
Not at 1,100 a day.
That's what I'm saying. Will we even exist? Will we? I mean, will we have any real presence, you know, in American society of any influence at all?
Let's be honest. At one point, we were number 2 in population. We're number 3, and at this particular rate of killing 1,100 black babies a day, we might be surpassed by Asians within the next two decades. We have done, and power to the people. I know that you really, in cities like Washington, D.C., you love having a black dais of council members who can support your Marxist liberal theology. But the bottom line is that you have used your race to kill your race.
That's not with Frederick Douglass. That's not what Harriet Tubman. That's not what Booker T. Washington died for. It may be something that E.W. Du Bois might agree with, but it's not something that those people that I spoke of earlier died for. They died that you might be free, and free indeed, not to be told by the slavery of thinking and being in lockstep with people who have only one interest, and that's self-interest, self-gain, and your debilitation. We must get this message out. Willie, what you do Monday through Friday is probably one of the most important things that can possibly happen, because you touch more lives in urban America than most pastors ever will. We have a fighting chance through you, Willie, which is why I was very concerned about your health and making sure that you stay alive. We need you, brother.
I appreciate
you,
that.
You, my brother, are the means and the way. G. Scott Rocks is another one. Dr. Evans, another one. We are the messengers, and we are effective. You know how we're effective? Because tonight, liberal America is afraid that someone's going to learn that the rule of law matters. And what they've been doing for the past 7 years, they will now be held accountable for. But who's going to support our message? It's the question that we need to ask.
That's exactly right. I appreciate your kind words. You know, but who? And that's my question. Who will support our message? Who will accept it? Who will receive it? Who will? Who, I mean, how can we lift their veil? Because they're obviously blinded. You know, my wife and I do a lot of work here in our community in East Tampa, and we often point out physical things. Look at the condition, the physical condition of our area compared to the physical condition of other areas. Then look at our leadership that we've had in place in East Tampa for the past 30 years.
Yep.
All Democrat, all Black Democrat. So mm-hmm. and how can you go outside of that and blame the white Republican who's never even walked in your district, doesn't know you exist, and how can you make them responsible and not make the persons that have had the responsibility responsible? How can you just step over that? How could you just be blinded by their color? And here's another thing that we have to think about is that what we often hear when we're trying to get this message across is that that our elected officials, like you have in D.C., good gracious, the anti-Walmart people, what the heck is all that about?
Anyway, wow.
Dude. If I was Walmart, rabbit trail alert. If I was Walmart, I'd say, no problem. We're going to pack up and take all our jobs with us. We're out of here.
I have news for you in America. Walmart decided, this came in after the news shut down on Friday at 5 o'clock. News for you. Walmart did send a letter to Vincent Gray, and they said that they are no longer interested in building any of their stores in Washington, D.C. And, in fact, they put up the one store that they had nearly completed for sale on N Street in Northwest Washington, D.C. In addition to that, they have received letters from Target, Costco, and other large retailers in Washington, D.C. that says that if this law passes, we will be shutting down our stores.
Rock on.
Marxist, but this is the scary thing. It's reported that 2,000 jobs would have been created by Walmart with the six stores, and that's absolutely true. But there are nearly 1,000 construction jobs which will not be created. Mm-hmm. How do we get into the construction industry? Sometimes it's by apprenticeship. Now those avenues have been cut off. What happens when Costco goes and Target goes? They have been the anchor for viabilities of economic development in areas that were considered economic deserts. So what the Marxists do is that they get you to the point where they attempt to look like they're using capitalism for your good. No, they're using capitalism for their good. And when they have come to a full point where they believe that capitalism could be a threat to them, they will eliminate the job opportunities that are present. They do it, and they do it purposely. So where do all these people go who will be losing their jobs? Well, there's only one place to go. You go to government. And, hey, as long as they are dependent on the government, what will they do? They will vote for people who show compassion and love and consideration and want to do a state program for buying phones for you and buying hair for you and getting your weave done on Thursday because you couldn't get it done because you don't have a job.
Stop. Now, you were now the phone thing, but when you start saying there'll be government weave.
Wednesday weave. Get your phone set to Wednesday weave.
Golly. We're from government cheese to government weave. That is not good. You know, and you know, I have another rabbit trail. We're having this conversation with a whole bunch of my friends, my black friends, who are all conservative types, and we just had the biggest laugh that you know the government gave cheese to a whole race of lactose intolerant people, and we just kind of went with it. It's craziest
thing
ever.
Straight from Wisconsin.
You know, damn well we can't eat that cheese.
But you know what? I'm not really lactose intolerant. It's the people around me who are intolerant of my inability to process lactose. You know?
I'm fine. Why are you crying? Stop all that crying.
That wasn't me.
It's cold in here.
It's only two of us in the elevator. That wasn't me.
Dang, you nasty. That's funny. But, you know, I mean, this is what happened. And people would line up for the stuff to eat that they knew they shouldn't be eating these big, huge blocks of cheese or cheese product. I'm not sure what that was. But
but you know what? Yeah. If George Zimmerman had that block of cheese that we used to get in the 70s, he wouldn't need a gun. That block of cheese would have done it right there. One smack. And then we wouldn't have the cheese.
Or Trayvon would have walked my head and said, "Whoo, dang, what's wrong with you, white boy?" So,
don't you eat the cheese like that.
Never mind.
But, you know, it, going back to the point, I'm going to tell people, I'll make the announcement on your show, I'm going to tell people over the coming week on my own show, I want to work with people in Washington, D.C. who want to get on the ANC. That's the Advisory Neighborhood Commission. There are some 2,000 Advisory Neighborhood Commissions, but those are the ones that actually make decisions that later show up on the dais as legislation, a.k.a. Walmart bills. I need people at the smallest levels of government in 2014 so that we can affect change in 2016. I believe that we're going to hold the Senate, hold the House. I believe that we're going to win the Senate in 2014. But it's not enough for us to be focused on federal things. We need to be focused on local things. I need some conservatives, and I mean some real conservatives, not the ones who like to come out for the Tea Party thing and get mad because nobody asked you to come up on stage and talk. I want some true conservatives who want to get their, roll up their sleeves, get their hands dirty, who want to go into the communities and say, you know what, these are some founding principles that we need to develop to make certain that your child at age 26 is not sleeping on your couch, but is actually creating a manufacturing firm to import or export couches to other areas of the world. That's the brain of thinking that we need in urban America. No more dependency on council member Marion Barry to get my cheese steak sandwich to me on the first of the month, but to make certain that I hold Marion Barry accountable when he votes for legislation that says that my son or daughter may be losing their job thanks to you.
Yeah, you know, and we don't have time for this, but you bring up a fantastic point. We definitely, you know what, and my disappointment, if I've had a disappointment with the Tea Party or the Tea Party movement, is that the Tea Party movement, with all their gusto and all their heart, has forgotten how to be successful, and how to be successful is on the local level. There are organizations like Freedom Works and American Majority that are training people to get involved at the local level. And you're right, the advisory committees, city, you know what, and maybe it's tough in a big town like where you live, but you know where there's a lot of city councils and county commissions and school boards, especially school boards, that we should be dominating. And we really need to focus on local elections. You know what, I tweeted the other day that I'm sick of conservatives talking about taking back their country when they can't even control their own communities.
Take back your community.
Yeah. Yeah. How about try that? How about trying to get a couple people to look at the city council, but you start talking about running for the U.S. Senate? How about city council where you live in Minot, North Dakota?
In Washington, D.C., 50% of kids drop out of high school before the end of their sophomore year.
Oh, dear.
50% of that group that remains won't graduate. There should not be a single liberal, Marxist or socialist, on the D.C. City Council, City School Board. Not a single one of them. Why? Because they have not proven themselves. We need to begin a self-defense case for our community. And if you don't like it, you can always leave. But we have to defend ourselves. Defend ourselves against liberals coming in and taking over our schools. Defend ourselves against them taking over our economy. Defend ourselves against them taking over our political systems. Defend ourselves against them taking over our judicial systems. And most importantly, defend ourselves against liberals, Marxists, and socialists coming in and taking over ourselves and our family. How many times have we allowed a minority, loud, audacious group like GLAD to come in and turn this nation inside out?
You know,
often
way too much that we've allowed these organizations that all they have is volume, and they don't have anything else. They don't have membership. They don't have standing. They don't have place. But they do have volume and sympathetic ears in the media, and that turn us inside out. You know, in the Declaration of Independence. It talks about light and transient causes. You know, that our government shouldn't be pushed around by light and transient causes. And that came from the idea of being pushed to and fro by different winds of doctrine. Yeah, it's biblical. Sorry,
yeah.
Y'all. Sorry for all those people who thought that people were deists. Sorry. You're wrong. Bummer for you, isn't it? Yeah. Just be angry. It's okay. Enjoy, embrace your anger, but I'm right. And we continue to do that, and you're right, and maybe that needs to be our new cry as we start working in our own communities, that we need to defend ourselves against the people who have failed. And especially, my God, man, you're talking about 50% of the kids, and make sure you got this right. I got this right. Then a DC school system drop out before their sophomore year, and of the kids that are left, half of them don't graduate. That's simple. These people have failed. These children.
Well, the starting salary for a DC teacher. The starting salary for a DC teacher is about $60,000 when you add benefits.
Holy moly. I might go back in education and move to D.C. Are you kidding me? When you're talking about starting salary in Hillsborough County, which is the eighth largest school district in the country, is more like 32.
Yeah. And you get results.
Yeah. We do better than that. We got work to do, but we do better than that. Good gracious, man. Good gracious. That's horrendous.
See, but you know what? We cannot be, and I know a lot of people are going to be upset when I say this, and I'll take the risk one way or the other. You can always get in contact with Ken at the Exceptional Conservative Show, no problem. These are my words, not Willie's. Anytime the NAACP is going to meet, they should take a look at what was created by the public school system that they supported when you have a Rachel Gentile who gets on the staff. Black America, in all reality, there was no white man in her neighborhood that was holding her back. There was a public school, a public library. Heck, they were giving out Obama phones. There was so many opportunities for economic and educational success. And this is what we produced. At one point, Washington, D.C., Dunbar High School was producing about a quarter of the nation's black doctors. Dunbar High School. Okay? There is no doggone way that we should sit back as conservatives and be so politically correct that we will allow the miseducation of Rachel Gentile to occur in America. There are too many billions of dollars that are being sent to public schools, and they should not be sent there so that we can keep them from going to better schools. We need to make certain that we take back our educational system, or at least create systems of equality where there is a free choice, so that if you have a daughter like Rachel Gentile, she has the opportunity to go to the same classroom that the president's children go on a single day in Washington, D.C.
That's very true.
Forgive me, I get passionate about that.
No worries, man. Yeah, and just like Trayvon, I spent 15 years in this school system, so just like Trayvon, I know Trayvon, and I know Rachel. I've met Rachel. I've met her, not that child, but children
yeah.
just like her, that are in situations that that for all sorts of reasons, that she ends up being the product of that school system, and the school system is never held accountable for Rachel. They had her, you know, the school system had her in their clutches since she was cute, since she was the smiling, 5 year old with the pigtails that I'm sure was adorable, was who wanted to learn, because you know what kids are, that's how they are, and you know she was cute and adorable, and she loved her teacher and she wanted to learn, and at the end of the process, 14 years later, that's what the school system was able, and that's what the educational system, and that's what the political system and the cultural system of where she lives was able to produce.
Yeah.
Frankly, you know what? A lot of people made fun of her. I felt bad for her. I really did. She was completely and totally unprepared by all sorts of entities in her life for that sort of notoriety, and it was kind of, you know, I got.
Notice how the state was not ashamed to present her in that fashion. There was not one ethical question. There was never a debate to themselves as to whether they should present her in that situation. They put her up that she might be ridiculed.
Yep.
They put her in the situation that she might be the one to be deemed the reason as to why we lost this case.
That's exactly
that's
right.
That's awful. At work against you. And that's why we should be mad enough to take back our community, take back
let's
our family, take back our
that.
Churches.
Amen. All right, listen, we got to get out of here. It's come to the end of the 90 minutes. It's been a great 90 minutes. I'd like to thank my friend Ken McClinton from the Exceptional Conservative Show. You can catch Ken tomorrow at 9 o'clock, not 10:30, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You do not want to miss it. Plan on it. You know, take some time out because his message is so important, not just to the urban community, but the community in general, to America in general. We appreciate you, Ken. We love you, and thank you so much for
thank
what
you
do
Willie,
it, and how you do it. Go ahead.
Can I say this real quick, Willie? please, if you're listening to this show, send this show to 20 other people and tell them they must listen to it if you want to change America.
That's how we do it. Okay, sir. Thank you. No, thank you. Listen, we got to get out of here. Thanks again for coming on. Thanks for everybody who listened, who were in the chat room. We appreciate you. And just like always, go out there and learn something, love somebody, and for goodness sakes, and I mean this, take care of yourself. God bless, and we'll see.